Welcome to the Fit for Life radio show presented by Frontline Sports Center right here on 98.5 FM The Wire. Talking about sports, health and wellness, entrepreneurship, and our faith. We're bringing your barbershop and hair salon conversations to the radio. So don't you dare touch that dial. Tell everybody you know to tune in to the Fit for Life radio show happening right now. Get ready to be fit for life.
Yeah, you know we're going to set it up. Yeah, you know we're going to set it up. Yeah, you know we're going to set it up.
What up, what up, what up, what up, though? This is Nathan J. Shaw Jr., and we're back again with the Fit for Life radio broadcast right here on 98.5 FM The Wire. It is Labor Day. Happy Labor Day to everybody out there. I know some of you may be sleeping in, but wake up because we have an exciting show for you today. I know you guys are relaxing and resting and being with family and friends. Going to be some good barbecue happening later on today, but we want you to wake up and be a part of the Fit for Life radio broadcast. You can listen on the radio, 98.5 FM The Wire. You can watch us on Facebook Live, or you can download the mobile app, The Wire 985. So make sure you're listening in. Tell your grandmama, tell your auntie, tell your uncle, tell your best friend, tell your haters to join us in on the radio today, because we have a special show. It is a Pastor's Round Table, something I've been wanting to do for quite some time, and we're going to get into it. We're going to talk about relationships. We're going to talk about religion. We're going to talk about some of the assumptions that are made. We're going to talk about, is the church feminine? We're going to go there, and you can actually call in 407-369-8555. Again, that's 407-369-8555. Again, you can watch us on Facebook Live and ask questions there as well. But I don't want to waste any time because we have three pastors in the building. And anybody that knows pastors, they have a long wind. So we want to give them much time to be able to be on the radio. And so I'm going to do my best to properly introduce these amazing guests on today. First, we have Pastor Barry Stevens. He is the pastor, one of the pastors at the Faith Center International, along with his lovely wife, Pastor Alexis Stevens. And he is a native of Clearwater, Florida. He was actually lived in California for a bit, attended and played college football at Kings River College. Pastor Barry has been a mentor for many years to young men ages 7 to 20. He's been successful at training and coaching his mentees in area of leadership, development, relationships, finance, and business. And the most recent launch is TREES, which is an acronym for Training Real Experiences Evolving Strong in Partnerships with Local Schools. There's a school at the Faith Center International called Faith Academy that he's very much active in, and we're so happy to have Pastor Barry Stevens on the radio with us today. How you doing, Pastor Barry?
Doing pretty good. It's an honor to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, next we have someone very, very close and dear to me, Pastor Jerome Shaw. I'm going to do him his proper justice as well. You all might remember that last name, Shaw. He's born and raised in Orlando, graduate from Edgewater High School and UCF, so a native here again of Orlando. He's had every position there is to have in church, everything from I don't know if he was ever a deacon, but an elder. He was over the construction team. He was over the media team. He played the instrument, a youth pastor, a sound engineer, TV director, and now he's the senior pastor of the Max Life Church along with his lovely wife Gloria Shaw. Has an extensive amount of experience in business and sales, and so brings that to his ministry call. And again, he is my father, Pastor Jerome Shaw. So I'm so glad to have Pastor Shaw on the radio today. How you doing, Pastor?
Good to be here. Good to be here.
I'm gonna try to call him Pastor, not Dad. Then we have Pastor Derek McCray of the Experience Christian Center, from Avalon Park. Graduated from West Orange High School.
Avon Park.
I'm sorry. graduated that. Listen, you got to get that right. Graduated from West Orange High School. I saw what interesting was a drummer in church growing up. And so really did every position you can imagine. A youth pastor in Eatonville. When I really got to know Pastor McCray, it was as a youth pastor in Eatonville. Now he's the senior pastor of the Experience Christian Church. Started in 2009. He's been blessed with a creative yet energetic style of communicating the gospel to the young as well as the seasons, and he has an events and media company. So we're so excited and happy to have Pastor Derek McCray. Thank you so much for being on.
Man, I'm glad to be here, man.
Listen, I want to start off with something a little bit more light, because we have some pastors in the building, so we could easily go there and be deep. But the first thing that they did when they came in, for those of you who may not know, is they started talking sports. And I'm talking, I'm not talking about, you know, just little tat sports. I'm talking about they went in talking about sports and who's going to win and everything like that. And so I have to give a story, Pastor McCray. I need your help with this because, you know, I'm saved. Uh-huh. I am saved, Sarai. Sarai is in the building, our engineer, graduate from Evans High School. She's tired of me saying that. But I have to tell you, you know, my heart, Pastor McCray, Pastor Dad.
Pastor Dad. I like that. Pastor Dad.
Something happened while I was in church that really kind of just it kind of took me out of the spirit. I'm gonna have to be honest with you. You know, there was the man of God was talking and preaching about how ministering about how we can, you know, achieve and how there's nothing too hard for us and that God can use us for some amazing things. And so we begin to pray. All heads are bowed. And so I'm there, Pastor. I'm mm-hmm. in prayer. I'm praying. I'm really in the, you know, in the spirit. I wasn't in the sprite that time. I was in the spirit. And then I hear the man of God. I'm gonna put the D at the end. The man of God talked about. He said, "Yes, and we can achieve. And if LeBron James can build a high school, we can." And it just took me out of spirit. I promise you. I couldn't. I opened my eyes. I promise you. I looked up. I was like, "What?" So we talking about LeBron James. I have a disdain. Mm-hmm. Because see, I'm a Christian.
Okay.
So my King James is the Bible.
Oh.
You see what I'm saying? So some people in the studio, you know, their King James is LeBron James. So I mean, you know, talk but who
he's an NIV kind of guy.
See what I'm saying?
Amplified.
But let me say, so I want to talk a little bit just for a minute. You know, the basketball landscape is changing, ever changing. And so we do have y'all's King is in LA, and then we have, you know, Kawhi going to Toronto. Who y'all like for basketball this year? Who do you think is going to take it?
Golden State.
You know what? See, I knew that I liked Pastor McGray. I knew there was a reason for it.
LeBron James know that. I think he's making moves for family more than for championships. He don't have anything left to prove. I'm not a LeBron James fan.
Yeah.
Sounds like a hater to me.
I'm not a hater. I'm not a hater at all. I think he's the greatest athlete, citizen ever to come through. Ever. I think that he's head and shoulders above Jordan.
Are you giving his eulogy?
I'm sorry, boss.
No. I like how she threw that in there. That was nice though. That was nice. But I think that he's the greatest sportsman ever to come through. He does so much for the community. You can't take that from him. I'm just not a fan. Yeah. And I'd probably be a fan of LeBron James if it wasn't for his fans.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna tell you for me, you know, and I'm gonna give the King follower a chance to respond. But for me, it was just how he came in, you know, came in with pretty much everything being given to him, and he hadn't proven anything yet. So I mean, you know, prove your stripes a little bit. But you know, Pastor Barry, you know,
I appreciate all the sentiments. You know, we are a fan of LeBron James, the King. I just, you know, being as we are preachers.
What? I got King Jesus on the radio.
We realize that we study and history, you know, we base our facts a lot on history and the history of LeBron James. Let me see. Every team he's been on, he's won a ring.
Not when he was first there.
When he was in high school, he won a ring.
He had to leave Cleveland.
When he was in Cleveland. And he took his talents
to South Beach.
Down to Miami,
but no ring the first time.
You know, he everywhere he's went, he's taken it. Every finals he's been in, when he's won, he's been the MVP.
When he's won, how many has he been in?
Pastor Dad, that's what your name, new name
Pastor
is.
Pastor Dad,
Pastor
I like
Dad,
that.
What would you have to say about this conversation? Because first of all, I want to say that I'm Orlando Magic fan. I'm a resident of
Me
Orlando,
too.
And I represent Orlando, and this is because of my father, who you know, back in was 91, 90. What do you have to say about all this?
Well, Minister Son, I am. I've never been a LeBron James fan either, but. I do feel like he is the greatest athlete I've personally ever seen. I love Jordan, and I was back, you know, I go way, way back. So I'm remembering Kareem. I'm remembering, you know, Magic and Bird. And I remember all the clashes and everything. But this man, I remember Shaq. Shaq was my favorite. You know, when he first came to town, he came over and introduced himself to me. He looked like a tree. The guy's huge. Just, you know, I was impressed by that. But LeBron brings more than athleticism. He brings community involvement, well, world involvement. You know, he has a stand. He's not wishy-washy. He believes in what he believes in, and I won't get into politics, but I appreciate the fact that he does speak his mind, and I agree with his mind, so I'm there. I'm not a fan, and mine isn't necessarily because of how he came into the league, although I had a problem with Kate taking Jesus' name and calling himself the king. But it's more so I had a problem, Elder Barry, Pastor Barry, with how he went to Miami.
Me too.
I had an issue with that. I really had an issue with that. He held people hostage for no reason at all. However, I will say this. This man has done the impossible. He's lived up to his name. I'm past the part about the King James. He might not have had a crown when he got there, but he has deserved it.
I thought I had some reinforcements. It's like we're doing good. But let me cut this off because I don't want to hear all that. So anyway, Warriors going there. So football. What's going on with football? I heard some healthy conversations about football.
I went to Florida,
so I love the Gators. But what's going on, Pastor?
Another premature celebration. You know, the Gators kind of every year, you know, we're back. This is going to be our year. I mean, I've been hearing that for how long we've been beating them on a regular basis? I kind of lost count after four. Every year, this is our year. Oh, we back. Oh, we in full fledged. Oh, yeah, I'm going to tell you now, the Gators' best asset is in West Virginia. That boy is a quarterback. Now, Greer is a great quarterback. I was nervous when he was at Florida. I really was. But I have no reason to fear J.J. Harrison. I have no reason to fear. But I expect it out of the Gators fans and out of UM fans because everybody's the U is back. The turnover chain got turned over to LSU last night. But, you know, until I see them do something the end of the year, the Gators.
You know, see, it's tough for us because at the Gators, our recruiting, we recruit model students. You know, we want student athletes, you know, non-criminal. You know, we want people that not just to come and be an athlete, but we want you to be a student athlete. We're trying to train you asset
Why did
to be
have
in
to leave?
The community. And so when you have, you know, former quarterbacks that still having problems in the NFL, you know, by way of FSU, you know. And
oh, let's not go there because you got Gator tight ends that were committing murders. We want to go there?
Okay,
just checking now because Urban Meyer's whole team was all criminals.
Well, on that note, so you see, we have some very into basketball, football, incredible. I mean, and really go there. Every time I see them together, they're just always at it. And so it's awesome to see the humanity side of pastors because I think there's this stigma that they're just figureheads and you know stiff and don't know how to have fun, don't know how to relate, unrelatable. And I think that you know when these individuals that I have on the studio today, you know, that's farthest from the truth. You know, I want to share a little bit about my background with them because this is a personal show for me. Obviously, there's you know not much to be said about my pastor dad. He's known me all my life. You know, before I had life, but I saw every aspect of ministry that he worked in. And a lot of times people see the pastor when they're on the platform, when they're on the stage, when they're actually now necessarily maybe getting the traveling and everything like that. They don't see the backstory. They don't see, you know, what it took to get to that position. And so I actually was able to see, you know, my father work literally in every capacity. I remember we have a picture of back then it was Full Deliverance working on the stage, working, you know, with Bishop and trying to build a new stage. I worked in the TV department ministry with my dad back when we was on TV and instruments. He was I don't know if he was my youth pastor. I think by the time I got really into youth, he had passed the baton, but he was youth pastor. So I mean, every area of ministry. And then I can speak to Pastor Barry Stevens, who I want to ask him about this too, but was really married into a church. And that could come with its own dynamics and issues or whatever your case may be, because now you're not just married individual, you're marrying the whole family in a sense. And so I saw a man that kind of came in and really had a sense of community, had a sense of relationship, really wanted to get to know the individuals that he was to serve, and just the mentoring that comes out. I've been able to be mentored by him and just directed and really had a great experience. And then Pastor McCray, you know, I saw, you know, my biggest knowing of Pastor McCray was in Eatonville with Macedonia Church. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that, you know, you actually reverence your the people who brought you into ministry, because so many people kind of disdain those and try to break away from them, but really saw a heart for youth ministry, you know, a real heart for youth pastoring. And it wasn't materialistic. It wasn't fame driven. It was really the heart of the people. And I was, you know, blessed to see that. And it was one thing that I actually modeled as I got into youth work. And so you have individuals that are down to earth, that actually understand the work of the ministry and not just the fame of the ministry. And so I want to invite you to call in 407-369-8555. Again, that's 407-369-8555. You can ask some questions as well. You can watch us on Facebook Live and ask your questions on there as well. I want to dig right into it. I want to talk about the new Orlando. And what I mean by that is we have some historic things that are happening in our city. And I depend, no matter where you stand on the political spectrum, we're not going to get into politics, but we have representation in leadership, and that's something that sometimes had been a little bit questioned before. But you know, just want to give some shout outs to the first African-American Orange County mayor.
Yes,
Jerry Demings. Yeah, who was on the radio with us recently. And first I mean, that's historic. That's, I mean, what does that mean, Pastor McCray, for the community, for kids coming up? What does that mean?
I think it just means hope and opportunity still exists. I think God keeps showing us that barriers can be broken. Mm. And when you look at from President Obama, you look down to the first African-American gubernatorial candidate, Andrew Gillum. Mm. Mm-hmm. You're looking down to, yeah, you know, Mr. I almost said Pastor Jerry Demings, but right now he's still sheriff, but mayor-elect Jerry Demings. You look at his wife, Val Demings. You look at Tiffany Moore Russell. Mm-hmm. You see so much that is just potentials. And so, for years, it's been stated that Orlando is not a good place for African Americans. Well, wow. I have to just contest to say that's not true.
Wow.
If you put your foot to the plow, anything is possible here in this city. And our representation, because clearly our black votes are counting a lot when it comes down to putting these people in office. So maybe we're stronger than we've given ourselves credit for in the past.
And you've been very, very passionate about, you know, souls to the polls, you know, really getting people out to vote. And that's been something you've, I would say, been on the front line on for quite some time. Why is that so important to you, especially the younger demographic, to get out and vote?
I think just showing our power. Sometimes we're discouraged, but we're discouraged because of our lack of our voice being applied or even inserted. And so I think that it's really important to me to see us get out, because I want to see a balance in us. Mm. Some things we pray about, I always say, sometimes we spend so much time praying about something that we can just handle ourselves. Mm. Some things don't require faith. It just requires your actions.
Wow.
And so I think that we have so much potential in us. And I don't like to see all these protests going on. Mm. My thing is, why do we protest and not actually vote?
Hmm.
Why do we protest? Because, you know, all we're doing is just doing a rally to get emotions high. But if we have no, bless me, but if we have no abilities to get ourselves to the polls, we just had an emotional roller coaster, which will bring no change and created a lot more emotions, which is going to get us into a lot more places of us responding in a negative aspect. Now we're getting incarcerated more. Now we got another protest going on against that. But let's just vote.
You know, Pastor Barry, I was here with Sheriff Demings and Dean Mosley. He was running for Ninth Circuit judge. He didn't make that, but just an incredible guy. And the topic of how they built prisons came up, and how they built prisons based off of, I think it's third or fourth grade test scores. And so you mentor young men, and to be in that dynamic, how does that make you feel when you're now, you know, a lot of times people that are making these decisions, they're, you know, up in the clouds, not necessarily doing the work. So someone who actually does the work, how does that resonate with you?
First, let me say I want to commend Pastor D, because oftentimes we don't publicly, you know, commend and appreciate our pastors, but when it comes to community, you know, he's known for having great church, but not only having great church, but Pastor D, I want to, you know, commend you and say thank you, because you've opened the eyes to other pastors, whether we believe it or not, to be able to
do campaigns in the community, to be able to open eyes. It's just not about having church within the four walls, but how can we now bring that out to the community? And so I want to let you know that I think you are a large in part the success that we see in the community, particularly when it comes to African Americans. Mm-hmm. I want to commend you for that.
Absolutely.
But to talk about the kids in the school and in prisons, I do have a passion from it because I was raised in the projects, the inner city, and I think that we got to take a look at how our system is. I'm not into the education system, but I think that we need to really look into it because my personal perspective and opinion, we're pumping kids with information and are we teaching them how to use the information once they get out of the schooling system? And so when the young men that I mentor, I'm teaching them how to be men, teaching them how to think, teaching them about business, teaching them about what it is to, you know, what a dollar means, what respect means, and not only teaching them how to win, but teaching them how when life brings adversity, how to deal with that. You know, I think it needs to be a balance, and I don't necessarily think building more prisons is the key. Mm. I don't think when I was coming up, they didn't call them prisons, they called them rehabs. You know, it was a rehabilitation center to be able to bring somebody in and to show them what you just did. How can we correct your behavior? But now, to me, it seems like it's more about the dollar. It's more about us, you know, it's institutionalizing, you know, our young black boys. And so if we don't start small, that's why we call it trees, because they actually come in. I deal with them as a seed because every seed has a tree inside of it. So you have to have a perspective to be able to see these young boys that they have trees in them. They have kings in them. There's something more than from the environment they grew up in, and unfortunately a lot of our boys don't have fathers in the homes, and so we have to be able to branch out to be able to see that there's more to these kids than the environment, than the things that they do. Just because they go to JDC one time, a prison one, that's not who they are.
Right. I think it's so important, and the executive producer Dwight Mitchell, shout out to him who's listening in, and Paul, the director of this station, corrected me, and I want to make sure that I give that correction. So Dean Mosley did not lose. He's in a runoff in the November election, and so excited about that. Again, not a platform to tell you who to vote for, but there is representation, and I think that's the biggest thing, that, you know, we have all these amazing individuals, and so there's still an opportunity in November. And speaking of that, we have our first African-American candidate for governor that's going to be in the runoff for the election, and knew a couple of people running for that initiative, but just to see that historic thing happen is amazing. But staying on that topic again, Pastor Dad, Pastor Jerome Shaw, you have been you know, passionate about youth for some time, and my dad is also on the board of Youth Empowerment Project, which we're proud to do, are doing some amazing things at Frontline Outreach, starting our after school program September 10th. But you've been a part of youth work, been passionate about youth for some time, and as we look at the landscape of the politics, specifically as it relates to our young black men, what did you see back then when you were first involved in it, and then, you know, what have we actually improved? Where are we at now?
Well, you have to qualify improved. Improved could be a good word, but what I see is the fact that we have come to a point where, let me go back to back then. Back then, you know, the goal was to just encourage people. Remember, this was in the 80s and what have you, and even before I became the youth pastor back in the 70s, you know, it was a normal thought process that if you're an African-American male, there's a great possibility that you're going to end up either in prison or jail. And those are two terms that we had. But in this time, there's so many more possibilities. And there were then, too. Mm-hmm. It was just a stereotype. It was just what people wanted us to believe. And let me tell you, the power of suggestion is very strong. And so when that is what you've been told all your life, you actually start believing that stuff. And frankly, I believe with all my heart that there are, Pastor McCray said, I mean, there are just so many countless possibilities now with us, you know, winning in, you know, in races and what have you. One thing that I'm impressed with and excited about is the fact that we do have a voice, and that voice is being heard now, and not just because of you know, the mayor, and just not just because of that, but I believe this is just a good time for us as African Americans if we take control of it. One thing that I think Pastor Barry said one of them said a few minutes ago, is that you get so many people that will say something negative, but when you ask them if they voted, their answer is no. Their answer is no.
Yeah.
And somebody very, very dear for me, I won't mention their name because they might be listening, but they were very upset about the presidential race. And I asked, I said, now, did you vote? And they said, well, no, but he shouldn't be there. What, the only way to not let him be there is to vote. And whether you like him or not, it doesn't make a difference. You know, you got people who are diehards, and you got people. I was listening to CNN, I think it was yesterday or today, and there's a gentleman said that if Jesus got off the cross and said Trump, first of all, he didn't have to get off the cross, but if he got off the cross and said that Trump is with Russia, he'd have to go back and ask Trump, go to the president and ask him if he was. And so you got people who are diehard in who they are. So how do you combat that? It's very difficult to combat something, a mindset like that, unless you rally people to go in and make a difference.
So you talk about that again. I remember you saying things years ago about how there was a reverence for church. There was a reverence for just the institution. You know, people, drunkards, you know, would walk by the church and they might turn their music down. Or I remember back in the day, you know, Full Deliverance, where they would come in the church, but there was a respect level. They weren't making it. Yeah. And now it just seems like that reverence has maybe been lost. And so the question I have, and I want to kind of tackle some things. We're not going to, you know, push too hard today, but I want to tackle, like, is the church still relevant? Because a lot of times when you look at the generation that, you know, I think is a hybrid. I was blessed to be on a panel with Pastor McCray, and we're talking about, you know, the next generation. And I think my generation, millennial generation, is in a hybrid state. We have some that kind of understand a little bit of the old and are pushing through that. And then you have some that's just, we're done with it. And because of the, you know, maybe traditionalism. And then the generation coming behind me really don't have the foundation that even my generation got. And so we're seeing groves and groves of people that are leaving the church. And, you know, the statistics say you leave when you go to college, you come back. They're not coming back. And so whose fault is that? Is that, you know, has the church lost its relevance, its relatability? Is it the people that's not understanding about the church? I mean, the way it's going in the next 10 years, are we going to still have?
I got a quick comment about that. I think that in that comment that you made a few moments ago was, you have people that, and y'all remember this, preachers, you remember when they rode by the church, they would at least turn the music down. Mm-hmm. And if they're walking by you, they would at least stop cursing. Mm-hmm. Until they pass by you. Now it doesn't make a difference. We've gotten to the point where it is a big difference, a huge difference. And people just don't care anymore. And you ask the question, Nathan's son, you ask whose fault is it? Here's what I see. There's such a divide. When we were kids, there was such a reverence that even if you didn't like church or like preachers or like, you still
respected
them. Mm-hmm. You definitely respected them. Now there's a generation, I would say 2.5 generations, that really stopped having reverence for God, and a lot of them stopped coming to church. So how can we get upset with their children when they don't have an example? And I think we have to get out there and give them more of an example at this point in time.
I'd like to add to it. I know we do a lot of focus on what is happening with the church, but I think that what has happened with the church is what's happened with the nation, with the country, with the world. There is no respect for the church. You're absolutely correct. But there's no respect for the office of president. There's no respect for jobs. I mean, you're talking about, I remember one of the guys, one of the young adults in the millennial generation and the centennial generation, and most people don't know the difference in the two. So they keep making centennials millennials. But I remember one of the centennials had a 6-figure paying job, but wanted to go out of town for a weekend. And the employer said no. The centennial said, well, screw it, I'll just drop it, and just left. Now, our generation is saying, are you crazy? 6 figures?
Wow, yeah.
This centennial felt like, I'm so qualified, I find another one, and I don't need you. Hmm. And so that is the overall vibe of society. And it just so happened that church is inclusive with it. Wow. And when we were in that same panel, and Sidney Malone, Bishop Malone, began to say some things to us.
Phenomenal.
And he taught us that because the generation before had such a hatred for even the what they felt to be suppression to church, they decided, I'm going to relieve my kids that they don't have that same suppression. That's in life. That's in everything. They didn't want them to struggle financially. They didn't want them to have to suffer through anything they don't want. They gave them this freedom of choice. And so the Bible says that it is the fault of the generation before.
Yeah, that's what happens with the generation after.
Yeah, that's scripture. Yeah, yeah. And we just see it happening right now. And so I think that the respect level has lost everything. Men don't respect women no more. Women don't respect themselves no more. I mean, just nothing is respected. And so I don't know why the church or and watch this. This is an outside influence trying to speak to inside the church to say that y'all have no respect. The truth is nothing has respect right now. And we're just a part of that system that is happening. But can I just flip it? I think we also have to stop categorizing everything to be one thing. True enough, statistics show that millennials and centennials are leaving church in the droves. But you got local churches that are seeing an influx that are coming in. Now, I'm not going to say that they are really helping to carry the church. That's a whole different discussion. But my church is full of millennials and centennials. Bishop Joseph Walker, who is my covering, he posted a picture this morning that showed that I mean, thousands of college students are flowing into his church. And so I don't think that we have to say that everybody is in that same place, because that's not the case.
Well, you know, and so and it's a good point, because respect. One of the things I did kind of a just an observation. I can't call it a study, but my grandfather's generation. Tradition was the issue. You know, they had to wear skirts, you know, dresses down to the ankles, and they struggled with traditionalism. I think my father's generation struggled with stability. That's where you kind of saw the homes being broken apart, and that you know, you didn't really see that from my grandfather's generation. You know, they kind of just stuck it out, but it's hard to find someone who hasn't had some type of a divorce, you know, in that generation. And in my generation, I think struggled with arrogance. We just knew everything. We kind of we didn't want to. Really, we wanted to try to chart our own path. But I believe there was a element of in my generation, maybe you all can tell me different, that still had a little bit of respect. It just, we wanted to go our own way. What I'm saying for this generation is a lack of honor. There's no honor that is known, but there's no honor that's been modeled. And so when you talk about the generation prior, a lot of times people call it rebelliousness, but is it really rebelliousness or just the untrained understanding of what honor is? And when you talk about respect and honor to me is two different things, but how do we fix that? How do we bring a sense of community, relatability to that generation? Because I focus a lot on it, but if they're not welcomed or if there's not a place for them, then the institution will die. So how do we?
I want to speak to that a little bit, because we got to understand Pastor D made some good points as well as Pastor Shaw, but we have to have an understanding. We just can't beat the millennials. We can't just beat them and say you don't have any respect. Everybody comes from somewhere, and if we want to, you know, if we look in the scriptures real quick, when we look at the children of Israel, when they came out of Egypt and when they got into the wilderness, they were children there. They were born in Egypt, but they was raised in the wilderness. And so it makes me look at, if I could just interject and put this on the table, what do we have young people say? Well, mom and dad and granddad, I love you, but I'm not scared to go into the promised land to get what belongs to me. And so they had to sit there and wait for those their parents to die off before they were able to go over into the promised land. So there's a sense of like, I'm tired of waiting. Because remember, those children that was raised in the wilderness were never beaten by the taskmasters of the Egyptians. Right. And so there's a whole different mental capacity there where their parents had a sense of discipline and honor to certain things that maybe have passed the time. And now you have the young people say, hey, we're not in Egypt no more. What are you afraid of?
Right.
We're not looking what's behind us. We're looking at in front of us. And so mom and dad and granddad, although I respect you, but it ain't going to take me 25 years to get to where you say, the way you say I'm going to get. I want it now. So I believe that these young people have a sense of urgency because they heard their grandparents and their fathers come back to say, hey, we can't go over there and take that because of the giants. And then you had Caleb say, we're able to do it. So imagine those young people had to suffer through all of that, knowing that they could have went over there. So when they got to their turn, when they got older and say, listen, I love you, Saul, but I think I can kill a giant, but I can't kill him in your armor and your way of doing things. No disrespect, but I don't want to use that. If you give me a chance to use what God gave me, you will see that we're not working against each other, but we're working together. So I think that we have to come to understanding that all millennials are not bad. However, we do have some that need training, but we're going to have to collaborate. How can two walk unless they agree? We're going to have to bring the mindset, not just spiritual, but we're going to get in the mindset.
But how do we do that? Because, you know, a lot of times, you know, and no disrespect, but there's such a structure, you know, the services are now on a time clock, you know, so how do you allow for young people to be a part of that experience and be involved, not just a member sitting on the side, but actually be connected?
Well, I think that one of the things that we have to do, and I got to go back to where Pastor Barry was, I definitely agree with they didn't have the same experience.
Yes.
So they don't have the same restrictions.
Yes.
Funny story. Yesterday I was preaching about the prodigal son, and in the prodigal son, I was talking from the standpoint that, he came to himself, and, you know, of course everybody get excited on that part of the text. You know, he came to himself. Oh, here's the turnaround.
Mm-hmm.
But, the thing that I wanted to pull out and illustrate most yesterday was when he came to himself, I wanted to talk about what the father didn't do. The father didn't put him on restriction. The father didn't make him go into timeout. He didn't put him in punishment.
Mm-hmm.
The father didn't do a lot of things that we do today, which makes it difficult for people to walk into deliverance. The place that I liked most about that text was the father gave him the rights to do something that he thought he was ready for, that he was not prepared for.
Mm.
I think that we have to be fluid and have to introduce to people our experiences. Our kids don't know the restrictions because we tend to guard them from our realities.
Mm-hmm.
We don't tell them the truth about what we dealt with. We don't tell them where we've been.
Mm-hmm.
We're too ashamed. And so all our kids see is our results and don't see our processes.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to make sure that the kids, that our youth, the younger generation sees the process, because the truth is this young man's lack of understanding of process put him right back into the placement of where he was failure. And when you, and here's the negative part about allowing our younger generation to consistently experience failure. They then begin to have a lack of faith. They don't believe that it's possible no more, because all I'm surrounded with is failures after failures, because nobody is taking the time to be transparent to tell them my realness. Like,
so is there a little bit of a hypocrisy in Christendom sometimes in regards to not being transparent and not really allowing people to see that, no, the people that's on stage are not perfect, that there wasn't a perfect path to salvation, that there are people that kind of fall and able to get back up. I think I think a lot of young people may feel like there's a striving for perfection that they'll never reach. And so how do we do that without losing the respect, the honor of, you know, that position, but still being real so that people feel that I can get there?
Can I tell you something that I'm in right now? I don't know if y'all been watching it lately on Facebook, but me and my wife went to the Beyonce and Jay-Z concert.
Mm.
And so we went.
Pastors?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. What?
Yeah, we went to the Jay-Z and Beyonce concert.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm catching that conversation from Florida to Michigan to California.
Mm.
And so a certain individual was on Facebook talking about pastors that went. And I told my church I was going before I went. And when I got to the concert, I posted. Me and my wife was at the concert. Mm-hmm, we had great seats. I'm not a Beyonce fan. Wasn't before I got there. Wasn't after I left there. But I also told, I wanted to expose to people, I had another reason for going.
Mm.
When I was a youth pastor and everybody was celebrating me as a youth pastor,
mm-hmm,
I used to get dressed up like my kids, shave my little beard off and go into the clubs as well and hang out in there so I can be educated in how I'm talking and communicating. Mm. Because for the longest, I think one of the things that made me effective in youth pastoring is I understood exactly where they were, mm-hmm, to get them to where I needed them to be.
Mm-hmm.
I did a Moses approach. I sent them into the land to spy.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
mm-hmm,
I used to go out and spy the land so I can talk. I can't be an effective promoter. That's the other side of my job. I can't be an effective promoter not understanding what my competition is.
Mm.
And so I went. Yeah, it was some eerie things at that concert. I saw a few other pastors there. I saw your pastor there. Me and him spoke. Was like, what's up? What's up? Like, hey, cool, chilling. But watch this. I went so I can know what my competitors are doing, because I can't be uninformed. I can't be uneducated trying to lead educated people to a placement. Again, it was some eerie stuff there. Some strange things that took place.
Yeah.
But it listen, my conviction level for me did not go off. It didn't like, oh, you convicted by this. It didn't do that, because I don't get prayed up for the concert. I'm prayed up in general. Mm. And so therefore, if the earth is the Lord's, the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein, if that is all the truth, why am I so suppressive in where I can go to when I understand what my mission is? Mm-hmm.
Somebody said, so, well, Jesus turned water into wine, why we can't drink it? But I want to say we're here at Fit for Life Radio Broadcast 98.5 FM The Wire, presented by Frontline Outreach and sponsored by Amer Group. You can call in 407-369-8555. Again, that's 407-369-8555. Be a part of the conversation. I just want to shout out some people looking on Facebook Live. Ashley Hainsworth, we have my past Pastor Alexis Stevens. We have Patricia Newton, our PA is on the call, actually on as well. I think I saw Pastor Kelvin Cabarrus, and so some wonderful people that are listening or watching on Facebook Live. It kind of goes into relationship versus religion, you know, and a lot of times I think that there is so much that people feel, and it could be assumed. We talked about the assumptions we want to cast down. People feel they come into church, and I got to get right before I go there, because there's all this condemnation. We know the Bible says there, therefore now no condemnation in Christ. But people feel that they're going to be beat down and they're going to be cast aside if they have just come from the club, if they are not at a place where they're wearing what may be considered the right thing. And so how do we bring that relationship factor versus the religion or the traditionalism of church? How do we reconcile that?
Before we attack that, I want to really comment and piggyback on what Pastor D was saying. He was saying about he went to a Jay-Z concert. We're in a different mindset, not to say we're doing different from what our forefathers did, but the scripture says that we're in the world, but we're not of it. Mm-hmm. And we've been too busy, in my opinion, being in the church and not being in the world. The ministry of Jesus shows us a picture how to be in the world, be not of it. He that knew no sin, that he became. So he took off a glory and put on the world, but didn't have the world in him. And he was able to effectively do ministry in the earth. And so if we don't get to the place that we can be in the world and be not of it, we got to know how to make the distinction, because if not, we're going to have a great disconnect with those that's coming behind us if we don't know how to do that.
We have a caller that has called in the Fit for Life Radio broadcast. Thank you so much for calling. Tell us who you are.
Hey, my name is Trinity Shaw, and I'm with my mom, Gloria Shaw.
That now sounds familiar. Talk to us.
A shout out, Pastor Barry, Pastor McCray. Her husband is Jerome Shaw, by the way.
We know.
Say it now.
Well, thank you for the shout out, Miss Trinity, and Pastor Gloria Shaw shouting out Pastor Dad. Thank you so much for calling in. So we were talking about that, and I think that's very powerful, because again, a lot of people look at the ministry being in the house, being in the four walls. How do we?
Can I kind of hit on something that you're talking with that Nathan as well? I think that the condemnation conversation has also gone to the place of trying to gain control of the entity of what the church is at the same time.
Mm.
I think we have to be very careful that we don't become so so acceptable. Because I told my church this yesterday, if the truth be told, the church was never meant for the sinner.
Mm.
The church was meant for the saints to gather. The saints should be in the streets winning sinners.
Right.
That's the purpose. Right. We've turned it to the church being for the sinner.
So what do you say to the one that people say that, well, the church is the hospital? It's the place that people come to.
It's the healing place for those who need healing, those who want to be healed. Mm. It's the place for those who have been bruised, battered, and scorned out in the streets that are of Christ to come in. Now, we have used the church as an evangelism tool.
Mm.
And I think that this is where you get into people saying, the pastor ain't speaking nothing to me no more, because now we're preaching every Sunday to sinners versus preaching to saints. And so now you got saints jumping from church to church trying to find a place where somebody's speaking to them, because once I have salvation, I don't need to hear that every Sunday.
So let me ask, because this is good.
I know that's controversial.
I want to dig in. I think that's good. But what do you say to, and I grew up this way, the preacher's kid who my salvation has been determined for me. And so, you know, in many times they feel, you know, they say preachers' kids are worst kids. Well, their experience sometimes is not allowed to be the same as another experience because they still have that weight. I was speaking of how Pastor Barry, you kind of married into a whole family. So there was a certain level of, clout that you had. There was a certain way you had to walk even in that office. Pastor's kids have the same thing. And so when you talk about the center being out there, but I grew up in here, but then I can't do what I did out there, but my friends are doing that. So how do we create a line or create a path for that young adult that's growing up in this church, but they may not be at that place?
There's such a double standard for the preacher's kid or the deacon's kid or anybody of authority within the church. First, I want to piggyback on what Dr. McCray said. One of the things that
doctor, was, I got elevated. Amen. I got elevated. Amen.
Bishop.
oh no.
the one thing that the church isn't supposed to be is necessarily a hospital that is contained in a building. And I think we get so caught up in the building. Mm-hmm. You know, we say don't come to church. The church should be in us. And when we go out and you do your outreach, and we all do outreach, when you do outreach, that's the church, not some building. So some people are, and this is why I had a just a real quick story. I had a over in Sanford, the heater went out, and we were in the pulpit, you know, and we had Bible study. And so instead of heating the whole church or trying to heat the whole church, but it wasn't working well, we sat up in the choir stand, and we had people that felt like it was sacrilegious to walk across the pulpit. Okay, but when did the pulpit get to be holy? You know, it's just some wood that we put together. It has nothing to do with the glory of God. You know, because if it did, we couldn't bless God in this building right here. You know, mm-hmm. he couldn't hover over us if we had to wait to go to church.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a double standard. You went through it, and Trinity has gone through it, and I'm sure you know your children have gone through it. She got so upset one day because she kind of did a little dance move. You know, that's what kids do now. Mm-hmm. And somebody said, "Oh my God, the pastor's daughter dancing."
Sarai, that laughing. What you right laugh for, Sarai?
And she just happens to be very expressive, and everything she does, she's extremely expressive. Even when she talks, she uses her hands. She's very expressive. So then you're condemning when your child does come to church and they're gang banging and they're bring a boy bringing his boyfriend to church, and I'm not even coming against that. What I'm saying is, how can you have a double standard with any children, and what message are you giving to children? And then how the question becomes, what's the wonder that they are where they are?
Well, and my, you know, we kind of get into that as well as relates to have a sense of morality now is almost you're a bigot, you know, to have any type of standard, you know, whether it released. I went to a school board meeting years ago where they were voting on a bullying law. That's how they categorized it. When you got there, it was bullying against transgender beings. Mm-hmm. And so there was already a bullying law established for bullying, period. But there was a specific focus on transgender beings. And so now, you know, if Susie wants to be called Sam, there has to be a respect level toward that. That's in Florida right now. Mm-hmm. So when the kids are ingrained into that, this is their reality. They're, you know, and wherever you stand on the aisle, this is not a show where we're making that for you. But when they're ingrained with different sexuality preferences, different music choices, different political spectrum, where politics has now gotten to the educational system because of this, you know, how do they maintain? How do they have that sense of foundation when maybe the foundation hadn't been given to them? And that may be a young adult, maybe a 30-year-old, maybe a 40-year-old.
I think that we have to also be mindful that no matter what household you come through, there is an expectation on it. Whether or not you are a Caucasian family and you have a construction company, there's an expectation that your son is going to carry out your company. Mm-hmm. And I think that we have put so much emphasis on the church, and I think it's an external an attempt to minimize the church, to devalue the church. Preacher's kids have been caught in some rough places. One of the things that when I started my church, I sat down with all my kids. My daughter Kayla was very young then. But I kept this message going, and I do it yearly basically with them as well. And that message is, we're not going to make you hate the church.
That's right.
We're going to teach you to love the church. We're going to teach you the principles of the church. We're going to teach you our expectations as my house first. And my expectations from my house just happens to coincide with what I believe in my church. And so we kind of go that route. We have a value system. And everything in life, everybody gives a value system. You know, let's go back to when we was younger. I remember my mom and dad used to tell me, hey, listen, you could date anybody, but make sure she can use your comb and come up in this house. So, you know, but that ain't nothing to do with the church. It's just an expectation level. My mom, you know, like, you expect your kids to make good grades, you know, and if you're an educator, they expect your kids to be smart. So I think every way that you look in life, whatever the mother and the father is, and if we're going to go back biblically, the inheritance is passed down. How do we keep passing down inheritance if we keep allowing everybody to have their own platform to start something totally fresh?
We have 10 minutes, and we never have enough time on this show, so I hope that this could be a something that we do again. I want to thank you all for coming. I definitely want you all to be back. I want to end, because again, we talk about, you know, you mentioned the word inheritance, and just want to tackle this, because again, there was a pastor that posted on Facebook about the realities of assumptions versus reality when it comes to church. And you know, a lot of money is a big part of it. At the end of the day, money is something that drives the business of church, but it also is something that people have allowed maybe to draw them away from church because of the focus of it. Can you just speak to, you know, the public in regards to the reality of having an institution, a business that has to be ran, versus the spirituality, the faith, the thing that you have to do as far as covering people? One of the things that the individual said was having, you know, basically praying for people. What he said was very powerful, because this is the only business or institution that you can come and eat. You can come and get prayed for. You can come to hear a band that they have to pay for. All these different things you can get free of charge, conferences, and never have to pay a dime. You know, the only service, if you will. And people want, that's a bad conversation, because, you know, church is the church, but at the end of the day, so can you speak to that a little bit? Because there are a lot of people that are maybe struggling with the whole money church thing. Why do they take up this many offerings or something like that? Can you speak to that?
I think a little bit, if I could just interject a little bit, this is my own perspective. For one, how I grew up, there wasn't a strong voice when it came to money, when it came to church, because of the stigma of money. And we took the one scripture, you know, love, money is the root of all evil, never really quoted this scripture correctly.
Right.
It was the love of money that was the root of all evil. But when you look at the scriptures, Jesus himself was not shy of talking about money. Matter of fact, when he was choosing his 12, one of them, he said, Peter, he said, can I borrow your boat? And you know the story. He says, cast out a little bit and I'm going to use your boat to be able to speak to the crowd. After that, he says, now, Peter, I want you to go out and I want you to go into the deep. And I want you to prepare for the greatest catch of your life. Now, mind you, he was not following him at this time, if I stand correctly. And so he went out there and Peter said, well, you know, no, I don't know, because it was against the season, because it was daytime. Peter fished at night. My point is that Jesus understood that Peter was going to be with him for 3.5 years. He was going to catch this amount of fish to be able to go catch the fish. That's and good. Sell the fish.
That's good.
So that now he's in ministry. Could it be that even us, just a thought on the table, do we do ministry? Are we not doing it like Jesus? Because he took care of business before he got into the ministry.
That's good.
Now, Peter, go take these fish, sell them, take care of your family, and come do ministry with me. We'll never have a money problem. Jesus was not shy of talking about finances and providing. We get to the point that we allow the world to bring in the greed, the rich, and the wealth. You're driving a Bentley and all. No, it's about provision. It's about provision. So we got to be careful that we don't allow the church to bring in their mindset when it comes to that. Okay, the dope boy, he can drive a nice car. Can the preacher? It was never about that.
Right. You make a very good point. The second most talked about topic in the scriptures is money.
Yeah.
The first is love. The second is money. And we have taken those influences and allowed it to minimize us and suppress us.
Yes.
In it. But
and
when
condemn
you,
us.
When you go back to looking at all the kings in the Old Testament, those weren't no broke boys. They were always successful individuals. I think that we can do ministry in church with no money. We really could. But ain't nobody showing up for that. just to be honest with you. That means the pastor got to go get a full-time job some other place in most cases, and it's not available for your needs. You know, he probably can't afford a cell phone no more either. You know, and so you can't reach him. When you get to church, you probably won't have any lights. So let's just sit outside in Florida in this hot sun. You know, we probably won't be able to afford a mortgage. So let's put a tent on somebody else's borrowed property. We can do ministry without money, but it's not going to be acceptable to those who want ministry, because let's be honest, the people want convenience even when they come get involved in ministry. And so I think that the money thing is necessary. You can't reach masses without money. You cannot reach them. You have no tool. One of the things that everybody, Beyonce is one of the most talked about situations that happened in Orlando.
Right.
Even though you had Brian McKnight the following night, you had Frankie Beverly Mays, had BBD, you had Keith. Everybody was here this weekend. She's one of the most talked about. Why? Because she is mega large. And I think sometimes we don't have influence enough to get somebody else to want to follow us. Money helps the church gain influence. Because now watch, nobody wants to live beneath. Everybody wants to live beyond and above. And we're not trying to make it a I'm saved so I can be rich kind of situation, because that's not the case. But you're going to need some kind of income to make sure that you can gain some kind of attention. Nobody, it's very hard to win a race politically without finances. People got to know who you are.
Right.
And in this society where you're competing against a Disney, you're competing against Universal Studios, you're competing against a lot of different entities that are reaching to grab attention. How do we grab it as well as people? And this is the new, money is a new evangelistic way for us to help gain.
Again, so wonderful of a conversation. This is really, really good, because a lot of times people don't get to hear the reality of it. I have another question, but I want to shout out, we have Katrina and Tyrone Shaw that's on the watching Facebook Live, Laura Dorsey watching on Facebook Live. Just want to thank all of the individuals that are watching on Facebook, and you can feel free to ask questions. Sarai has a question. Sarai, the engineer, the question. I have to do the introduction every time I call a name. Graduate of Evans High School. Sarai has a question. Go ahead, Try.
Hello, pastors. How are you guys?
Wonderful.
I do have a question, because I grew up in a church, but I never really understood the roles. They have a pastor, they have a bishop, they have evangelists, and they have like deacons. Like, they have all these roles, but for me, I always thought it was like one thing. Like, they all fell under the umbrella, like the bishop, the pastor, and the evangelist. So you guys being pastors, like, what does, like, what is the description of each role in the church?
Now, that's going to take more than 2 minutes.
Give me like a brief summary, a gist.
That's a difficult question to answer. It is. So that's why I'm going to give that to you.
Oh, you're going
to
give it to me?
Yes. Yes.
I would take let's start up kind of apostles usually kind of establish churches. They find churches, they establish. Right. Bishops is really an office of administration. And it kind of governs over, gives insight. We've kind of taken that now and also allowed it to be a platform of either fatherhood or motherhood, as well to pastors. Pastors are those that really kind of deal with the local church themselves. We shepherd, we lead, we guide, we give understanding, truth, revelation to those who are the individuals. Evangelists are those that kind of go out and they actually bring motivation, energy. They revive houses. Prophets kind of speak the word of the Lord. They tell you things to come, and not this spooky stuff that's just telling you things that you already know. Those are kind of the offices that work in it. Some preachers that are great with motivating have not caught on that they're not pastors. They're evangelists. Some pastors that just pastor a church have not caught on they're not apostles. They are pastors. Some bishops have not caught on that they are pastors. They don't have a sense of government governing for the masses. And so those are kind of the offices in a whole quick snapshell as it comes to the kind of the hierarchy of the church.
Did that make sense to you?
And what do you say to that? Because I mean, you know, there's a lot of you can bring King James. We have PA is actually allowing us a few moments to extend. So I want to ask this question because, you know, realistically, you know, a church is an institution where, in essence, There's not a lot of test taking that has to take place for you to assume a particular office. So it's the man or woman of God that sees something in an individual and, you know, can take them through their own whatever and then appoint. Whereas when you go online. OK, give us one more second. We'll be right back with the Fifth Life Radio broadcast.
The Wire.
I got a story about that. Let me answer that.
And we're back with the Fifth of Life Radio broadcast. Shout out to PA who's allowing us to extend just a moment because this is such great conversation. I told you we went past us. So when you went past us, they got that long win. But I was talking about how, you know, online there is probably a series of tests. I've never researched it, but a series of tests that they have to take to become a particular office. Whereas in the church, it's really self-identified. You're identifying. So, and again, I believe wholeheartedly that there should be an appointment or ordination and all of that. But what do you say to that skeptic that would say, well, at least they, you know, a doctor takes tests, a lawyer takes tests, this takes tests. But in church, it's more about, you know, seeing something in someone. What do you say to that?
Well, I would say this. I think that it's important that we have qualifications and we do qualify for certain things. But I do believe wholeheartedly. I remember when my bishop talked to me, he said, I saw in you, and I made the mistake of saying, did you really? Because I didn't see what he saw.
Wait, right? Pause.
Bishop Freeman?
But pause.
They didn't know who we're talking. Who was talking.
Shout out to Bishop Woody E. Freeman.
Dr. Bishop.
And it came out so quick that I backed up and I said, well, God bless you, Bishop. And I submitted to it. But here's a question, and I'll just say this. I have a friend of mine, good friend, great guy, but he's not in the church, and he says that a preacher should be a person that just that has a regular job. That's how he said it, has a regular job and just preaches on the weekends like it's a hobby. That's really how he thinks. So really, I think we ought to be looking at the perception that people have of the church rather than, because what we're looking at is what the church is, and what, but really the mass majority of people don't go to church. Mm-hmm. And the mass majority of people have a perception, and that perception is negative and is wrong. And so I think we have to first address that. I believe we're in a place that it doesn't seem like it, but I think we're in a very good place right now. I think we can make a difference, and I'll let you answer the question or you answer the question. But I think we're in a very good place. I don't think we see it. I don't think we recognize it. We're in a place now where if we do it right, the way God wants us to do it, we'll be able to capture or recapture what God wants us to do so in this time. He never leaves us without a plan. He never leaves us without a way to do what he wants.
And so that's a good segue. What do you see for the church? And again, recognizing that it's not just about the four walls, mm-hmm. you know, it is about the church that lives within us. But what do you see? Because every business, you know, this is a station that we talk about entrepreneurship. Every business has two things that the church don't do well. I believe should have a plan, 5-year plan, mm-hmm. and has succession. And so these are two areas that church does not often do well. So what do you see for the next 3, 5, 10 years of the church? Is it still going to be around? Is it relevant? How do we compromise that?
I can't say that the church don't do that well.
Okay.
Because of the fact that a lot of churches that I'm in association with has a succession plan,
mm-hmm.
Even down to a fall plan now. No, wow. Just because it's not exposed and publicized does not mean it does not exist.
Mm.
And a lot of people talk from the outside, not understanding inside information. Mm-hmm. But most churches, trustees, and when you even get into it, when you're dealing with churches with banks and they're getting facilities, that stuff is all in place because the bank is giving you $2 million. They want to know what is the plan after this plan.
Wow.
So it does really exist, but it's sometimes the unknowing element that is not exposed to the house.
Is that it? Should that be exposed, or is there certain parts of it that should be kept private, or should that be exposed?
I think it should be kept with trusted individuals. Mm-hmm. And here's my reason for saying that. If exposed too early, individuals who are in the pews sometimes will start trying to maximize already and create this overthrowing effect. Let's go biblically. Moses and Joshua. Joshua is there the entire time. He's fighting the entire time. Mm-hmm. He's going to be the succession plan for Moses. He's there fighting when Moses' arms are tired. Moses is not down in the battle fighting. It's Joshua down there fighting up the battle and winning. And at the appointed time, he comes up and God has to confer to him again that my servant Moses is dead. Mm. It's time for you to go forward. The plan was always in place, mm-hmm. just not exposed to all the people. The other component, when you said the five-year plan, there are plans already out. We do a five-year plan for the church as well. And we expose this in our church business meetings. Mm-hmm. But here's the truth. 90% of your church don't show up for that meeting. Mm. They don't show up for that meeting. They don't care about those type of those things. But it's not that it's not happening and taking place. Today's church is totally different than 20-year ago church. We are more, we have accountants, we have attorneys. We're doing a lot of things differently now, but we're still being judged off of 20 years ago mm. and not off of the church of today. I agree totally with Pastor Father, Father Pastor. I think the church is in a good place. It's reshaping the minds of those who attend.
And let me interject a little bit on that. Okay, when you see a Burger King that's closing, it doesn't mean that the Burger King entity is closing. It was that franchise that could not keep up the revenue to be able to keep that business open. So just because you see one Burger King close does not mean the entire corporation of Burger King is closed. So when they say that, when we talk about the church, where will it be? If you see one church doing bad, it does not necessarily represent the church as large.
Right.
We have to keep in mind that oftentimes when we talk about the church, we're probably talking about our community where we are local, you know, where we pastor at, but the church is in India. Mm-hmm. The church is everywhere. So we want to, the church is at large, so we say the church is always going to be here. It was designed to be here, so we got to keep that in mind. Just because you see one closing doesn't mean the entire thing is going to close.
And another thing, I was looking at a Starbucks the other day, and they built one on West Colonial, and I noticed it, but when I passed by that one that used to be by Walmart, I didn't know, because I said that's too close, but I didn't know that they had closed that one to open this one. So really, they're shoring up. They're actually making it better than it was before.
And when they
didn't have a drive through,
and when they closed it, it took some time for the new one to open because they was preparing.
So two things I want to touch on, if we can, then we're gonna have to go. One is really, again, this individual that had the Facebook post that was talking about the business of church really talked about how seasons of business, if you will, the summer months, people kind of draw back giving, they're traveling and things like that, and how it's very difficult where you have light bill, water bill, you have construction, you have all of this, and then you have a reduction of people. Or one thing he said was really interesting, because our church is going through it in the sense of a construction project, and he said when people, a lot of times when churches do construction projects, they end up potentially losing money because the people take their tithe and offering and put it into construction and don't necessarily replace the tithe and offering. And so whereas the tithe and offering that was supposed to take care of the church bills and things like that, that money is taken and put in construction, and now there's a red in the bills. I just thought that was interesting because it's kind of a behind the veil look that a lot of times we don't see. Can you just touch on that a bit? Because I know that we have churches represented here that's in construction projects and growth and expansion plans. And so can you talk through that? I mean, for the average parishioner who maybe not understand that, you know, just taking from one entity or one offering, if you will, putting into another offering. I was a part of a church today. We have a television ministry offering. And just focused on that. So can you just touch on that for the average person who really may just not understand?
One of the things that I try to push to my church is not a Sunday to Sunday kind of mentality. The truth is, you don't have to join a church. But when you do join it, you know, you can attend a church every week as a visitor if you really wanted to. But when you join the church means you're buying into the vision, you're buying into where we're pushing this forward. And so I try to sell my membership on a 52-week basis, not on a when I show up Sunday basis. Because as that pastor was stating, that there are weeks when we all know June through August is challenging for the church. And then so is the end of November through January 1. That's challenging. Those are not church seasons. But we got to get our people into being committed to the plan overall. You look the Deltas, you look at the AKAs, you look at these fraternities, sororities. They got these dues. That's covering for the year.
That's right.
And the people buy into the year process of it. And I think the churches has to do the same.
I totally agree with Pastor D.
Absolutely.
So I want to talk, this last topic that I want to talk about, and hopefully we can come back and kind of dive into it a little bit more. But as it relates to the catering of church, a lot of times there's ministries that may cater to maybe a seasoned crowd, or ministries to cater to a younger crowd, but universally there's usually more women in the pews than there are men. And even if you were to hear certain preachers preach, they say, tell her she said this, and it's really the framework is usually geared toward the woman, even in the conversations and the preaching, than the men. And it could feel like coming into a church, I know we've had conversations like this before, is it welcoming to men? Is it something that they would feel wanting? And I know we've already established that it, one church can't represent all church, but could it be said that a lot of the practices of church cater to more of a feminine representation than a masculine representation to generate, you know, people in?
That's a big, I hate to say it like this, but that's a big buying audience, the female side of things. And also it's a very submissive and emotional audience. But you know, I do hear preachers a lot of times say, you know, slap somebody with a bad manicure. Well, that doesn't include us. Well, I hope that doesn't include us.
Well,
watch out.
I heard somebody say, well, I need to get a pedicure.
I said pedicure, but he said bad nails is what he said.
Slap your neighbor, high five, and all of that, you know, dude, I ain't finna slap, you know.
We slap high five in football.
Yeah, we say slap your neighbor, not slap high five. Do we not, though?
I'm just saying, like, if I, good play.
I'm okay with that. I don't have any problem with that. I do have a problem when the references are all female. Pretty much female. Mm-hmm. You know,
are they just appealing to who's in front of them, or is that? I mean, is there something there, or is it just perceived?
I think we have to put forth a conscious effort to raise the man. I put in certain barriers in my church to raise the man. I have deacons and I have deaconesses. Instead of me flowing a lot through my deaconesses, I flow a lot through my deacons with that. I have a rule for ushering. The men on my wall, the people on my wall are men. So I intentionally find placement for men and highlight the importance of those placements, because women are going to be there regardless. Mm-hmm. But I think you have to make a real conscious. That's why you have 400 women in women's ministry and 50 mm-hmm. men in it. You know, because you got to do a real conscious job. And we also got to stop thinking that all men want to come to see a football game together. All men want to go on a fishing trip together. Mm-hmm. We got to find out what is it because I might want to do football, but I might not want to do it with my church men. Mm-hmm. So I got to find out what is it that I want to do with the men of worship together. But the pastor has to put certain emphasis on it.
We got to have another show because
do the women appreciate the fact that you put men in?
Oh, they love it. Yeah. I think women are looking for things. Women are looking for things to highlight their husbands in.
Right.
And I think the church got to go back to looking for family instead of just looking for people. Just let's build families. There, you know, I want to see the ladies in my church married. I want to see, you know, I want to see kids. And there, if you don't have a healthy church of families nowadays, you're probably going to have an empty church pretty soon. Mm-hmm. Because at least when you got two, they have something to buffet off of. When one is being emotional, one is feeling disconnected, the other can kind of have a little buffeting conversation in there.
So we got to go. That led into something else really, really quick. And then I do have PA wants to make sure that you mention the Safe Surrender program that's happening in the church next week. Yes. You definitely want to make a mention. But you mentioned about raising the man and making sure that there's a place for that. But having representation here, what do you say to still a traditionalistic, maybe ignorant view that women can't be in leadership roles, can't be in those areas of pastoring, apostleship? We're not trying to have a theological conversation, but that's still prevalent in today's time, and we're here in a city where there's a lot of powerful female representation. What do you say to that?
I don't have to, and I know these guys speak much better than I can to it. I don't have to entertain that. I just tell them to look at their works.
That's right. That's good.
Not only that, when you buy a bicycle and it's not assembled, it's in the box. When you open up the box, the first thing we don't do, we begin to assemble the bike without looking at the manual. But the manual says, let them have dominion. He says, let them have dominion. So we go back to truth. Truth means the original intent. Mm-hmm. So we go back to it. What's the argument?
Yeah, yeah. Wow, that's good. Good stuff. Good stuff. We have had an incredible, incredible time. I want to just highlight some of the outreach that has gone on in the different various ministries, because I think if you don't realize how much goes towards outreach, and I'll let them speak to itself. But I know from personal experience, Pastor Shaw with Max Life Church is constantly doing outreach of food and clothing and being a resource to the community, and a strong to the nursing home facility and things of that nature, whether it be in Sanford or Winter Garden. I know that the Faith Center National just came through a wonderful summer where I think it was about, was it 800?
Over 850 meals were fed
in the community. Wow. They maybe not have had that opportunity to have those meals in the community just recently, and a Faith Academy is doing some amazing things. And then I know that, of course, Pastor McCray and has season blessings every year and always are doing things. I think you did something I saw on Facebook where you had a day for teachers, a pamper day, and I thought that was just so phenomenal. Yeah, so these are ministers not just talking about it but being about it. PA wanted you to talk about your SAFE program that's coming up next week.
Yes, we partnered with Orange County the state attorney's office, and we're going to have it where instead of going to the courthouse, you can come to the church. Mm-hmm. And they're going to try to handle your cases and everything there. You can safely surrender. It's going to be a way for you, those who have outstanding warrants and stuff, to connect now and to be able to solve the problems versus you getting caught riding down the street.
Yeah.
And now it's an aggressive process because there's a warrant for your arrest. We're saying come to the church. Let us deal with your issues there.
That's good.
It's going to be safe. You can surrender. We're coming to resolves, so we're not building this prison pipeline even stronger. And so just opening the doors. And it's going to be happening, in two places as well. My church is one location, and we recommended a place on the east side of town as well. I can't say that name of the church because I'm not sure if they actually went through and signed off on it. But I do know they was working on two locations, West and East Orange County areas. But it's going to be great. Whatever your issues are, show up and speak to the judges that would be there. Speak to the officials from the public, from the state attorney's office as well. And let's resolve some cases, because so much is small things that became big things.
Mm.
And they're only big because of your inabilities to be attentive to the issue. And so we're saying we're going to take that little medium ground away. Let's get back to the small issue that it was and handle the situation.
Yeah. And it's actually adjudicated right there.
Mm-hmm.
I applaud that. That's excellent.
That's phenomenal. So there is wonderful things coming out of the church, and the church is not just in the building, it's in our hearts. We are unashamed, unapologetic, and unafraid to talk about our faith. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Fit for Life radio broadcast right here on 98.5 FM The Wire. This has been the first, and hopefully not the last, Pastor's Roundtable discussion, and it was so phenomenal. Thank you so much to Pastor Barry Stevens, Pastor Dad, Pastor Jerome Shaw, and Pastor McCray, Derek McCray, Experienced Christian Center, the Max Life Church, the Faith Center International. Thank you so much for joining. We'll see you next week at 10 a.m.
You have just listened to the Fit for Life radio show presented by Frontline Sports Center. But it doesn't stop there. Make sure you stay connected by following us on all our social media at frontline.sportscenter. And visit us online at www.frontlinesportscenter.org. Be sure to tune in next week, Monday at 10 a.m. right here on 98.5 FM The Wire. And remember, stay fit for life.
Set it off. My team gon' set it off. My team gon' set it off.